We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
The Chicago Bulls select Kobe White.
LaVine with the runway.
Get up or get out the way, Trae Young.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm here as always with Jason Pat. This is a special live episode of the podcast. We're doing it on the Locker Room app. We're talking about a Bulls loss, 107-103 to the Knicks. The Bulls won the first game of the series against New York. The Knicks come back 2 days later, beat the Bulls. The game was not as close as the final score would indicate, I would say. The Knicks physically dominated the Bulls inside. There were times where the Knicks looked like an elite offense when in reality, this is one of the worst offensive units in the league. I thought the Bulls were really missing Wendell Carter Jr. in this game. It was a layup line to the basket, particularly in the first quarter when the Knicks came out with a 34-17 advantage. The Bulls had a terrible shooting night. The Bulls did make it interesting late. So how are you feeling about this game right now, Jason? It was definitely a really frustrating game to watch. Things had been trending a little bit up for the Bulls before this, at least in terms of their first game against the Knicks. But this was a pretty brutal game.
Yeah, definitely frustrating, just especially with the schedule like this week in general. Like, the Bulls had a chance here to maybe even like get back to 500. They beat the Knicks the first game to end a losing streak, and they come into the game tonight. If they would have gotten a win here, they got two coming up against the Magic, who've been like the worst team in the NBA since Markelle Fultz got hurt. So like, they had a chance here to go on like a nice little winning streak, and they blow it. They were terrible from the opening tip. They just had no energy. Like, as you mentioned, the Knicks, I think the Knicks had something like 22 straight points in the paint, like, to start this game. I don't have that exact number in front of me, but it was something like that. Just, I mean, it was a layup. Like, Elfrid Payton, who Knicks fans hate, and I understand why, because he's incredibly frustrating to watch. And even though the Knicks won the night, Knicks fans are complaining about Elfrid Payton. I mean, he was getting to the basket at will. Mitchell Robinson on the offensive glass. Julius Randle was bombing threes. Like, the Bulls just were not there at all on either end of the court. And just kind of set the tone for the entire night. Like, Lowry was awful. We'll talk about Lowry more later, just his kind of the roller coaster ride of Lauri Markkanen. But yeah, I mean, he was bad, or the Bulls were bad for almost the entire game. They were down, I think they were down 15 going into the fourth. The Knicks kind of just, every time the Bulls would make a little run, like, the Bulls did recover in the second quarter a bit, but every time the Knicks would make a little run, the Bulls kind of, or the Knicks would hold them off. I believe it was a 15-point game going into the fourth, and the Knicks went up 18. It looked like they were dead in the water. And then the Bulls made a big run, and I thought they were going to win this game. They turned that 18-point deficit down to, I think they got it down to 3 at one point with a couple minutes left. With 5:45 left after a nice pass from Zach to Lowry, they got it down to 3. And then they just kind of went down the tubes again, and the offense just kind of fell apart. And the last bit of the fourth quarter was really ugly for both teams. Some really bad turnovers, some bad possessions. So as bad as they played all game, they had a chance there down the stretch to come back. Denzel Valentine, I know... he can be very infuriating to watch, but he was legitimately very good. He sparked that run, and then they just fell short. They did not make enough plays. The Knicks did just enough to hold the Bulls off, so definitely a very frustrating loss tonight. It's given, like I said, the schedule and where they could have been if they went on a winning streak.
Yeah, the Bulls were just getting nothing easy until the fourth quarter. Yeah. And They did have a pretty big second quarter, I guess, to make the game close. They scored right before the halftime buzzer. But in general, like, this was just such a classic Tibbs team type of victory. Like a team that like basically has no shooting on the floor, just lost to the Bulls. Like, you knew it's going to be hard to beat a Tibbs team twice in 3 days. To see what Elfrid Payton was able to do against the Bulls tonight was just so damn frustrating, because Knicks fans have been hating Elfrid Payton.
Yeah.
Calling for the rookie Emmanuel Quickley to take over in the starting lineup. Well, today Quickley only got 13 minutes. He was glued to the bench most of the game, but he did like rip a couple big threes late in the game. Payton was like amazing in this game, and it shows just how weak the Bulls guard defense is. When you talk about the Bulls as one of the worst defensive teams in the league, and I mean, we have to talk about it, because last year this was hovering around top 10 overall defense, right? And this season it's been one of the worst units in the league all year. They're 24th overall in defensive rating, I see right here. So this is a team that's just getting picked apart on defense, and it's because of the guards. I mean, Kobe was really struggling on both ends of the floor tonight. If you look at the all-in-one stat, like Raptor on 538, coming into tonight, it had Kobe as the 12th worst player, 12th lowest-rated player.
Nice.
I do think that, you know, he's going through a particularly rough stretch in his career right now. Thankfully, he did hit a three late. He ended with, 13 points on 13 shots, 6 assists. But to me, Kobe was a major negative on the floor for the majority of the game. The Bulls' turnover problems reared their head once again. I believe the Bulls are averaging just about the most turnovers in the NBA. Actually, the Knicks had 17 turnovers tonight, and the Bulls only had 9. But still, the Bulls had some frustrating turnovers. Kobe had a frustrating one late. In general, it's pretty obvious that like the Bulls are missing a steady hand as a playmaker and as an initiator to get everyone going. So, it's clearly a flawed team in terms of the Bulls. I do think that like they're about as good as the Knicks. Like, splitting a series with the Knicks is probably right around their true talent level. If the Bulls were to keep, Thad Young and Otto Porter and all the veterans throughout the year, like, I think the Bulls and the Knicks would both probably be in this play-in tournament, and we could get excited if we want to about the race for the number 8 seed in the Eastern Conference with, not a lot of outs towards looking to improve the team in the draft. But, this is just sort of what the Bulls are. They can get hot offensively. The offense ranks 15th this year. That's a major improvement from last season. And it's really weird because the Bulls in general have never been like an offense first team, right? Like, I guarantee that every year the defensive efficiency ranks higher than the offensive efficiency. I believe that's been the case, like, going back 15 years, maybe with one exception, but I'm not even sure. So, a lot of the Bulls' problems all season, I think, have been on display recently. And yeah, this was just a tough loss because they couldn't hit a shot, and they were just getting out physicaled by the Knicks.
Yeah, they shot 6 of 36 from 3. It's crazy that they were in this game, considering they shot 6 of 36 from 3. They still almost shot 50% for the game because they were making, like, every floater they threw up at the basket, and Zach's finishing was incredible. Zach had a really weird game. He bad shot selection, I think. He was 0 of 7 from 3, but there was a point in the third where he just kind of took over and was driving the basket and hit a bunch of shots, and he was still 10 of 21, even despite going 0 of 7 from 3. With his finishing this year has been crazy. Thad Young had 19 on 9 of 11 shooting, so like he had a really nice game with some of his floaters. We did see Patrick Williams have a nice fourth quarter. Our guy Kevin Farragut here. Kevin, do you want to talk about Patrick Williams? Sorry, I just brought him up. You want to talk about him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't really think that, I thought Patrick was good in the fourth quarter. I would like to see him be more aggressive earlier in the games. Like, I feel like the talent is definitely there with him. And especially when the Bulls couldn't get seemingly any of their outside jumpers to go, like, he has that ability to put the ball on the deck and, get inside and, hit mid-rangers or even go all the way to the basket. And when the jumpers aren't falling, to have your team like catch a rhythm or whatever, sometimes it's good to just see the ball go through the basket. And I just don't think he's aggressive enough on offense sometimes. I mean, I think everybody kind of has treated him a little bit with kid gloves lately,
for sure.
He is because he is so young and like the flashes have been so promising. But like, you know, I think it's fine to start having a little bit of expectations for him, and especially with the talent that is obviously there. So it's just like, I think it's a mindset thing where he's, I think initially a lot of people, and myself included, talked about him as like a guy that kind of lets the game come to him or a little bit, but like there's a fine edge there between letting the game come to you and, you know, being overly passive. And I think I would like to see him turn the dial a little bit more towards being aggressive and trying to make things happen on offense rather than kind of being more of a passive observer who, you know, makes things happen after the first three options on a given possession didn't work out.
Yeah. Now, Pat entered this game shooting 40% from three, but he's been really hesitant lately to let it fire. I feel like it's really in his head. And in general, he's had a pretty low volume of attempts, despite, you know, seeing the ball go through the hoop 17 times. I think he's made 17 threes to start the season. So Pat, just let it go. Just shoot the ball. I really hope he's not one of these guys who struggles with his confidence like Wendell, because you can see when he decides to attack off the catch, like when he has it in his head that as soon as he gets the ball, he's going, he's just a freight train going to the rim. Like, he's too big, he's too fast, he has nice touch. So that's what I like to see him do a couple times late in this fourth quarter. He also had a nice counter to get an easy bucket. So I think, you know, he's going to have to continue to figure out some moves in terms of ways to score around the basket. But yeah, you need him to not hesitate to shoot when he has the open catch and shoot three, or just like attack those closeouts, man. That's going to be a big part of your game. And you saw him have some success with it tonight in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, just to tack on to that, Ricky, I really hope he's not another one of these guys that gets in his head too much like Wendell, and seemingly like Lowry, because Lowry is a lot of the times does drift into the same sort of passivity. But what I was going to say is I think Steph Noh pointed this out in our group chat a while back, that like when they played in Charlotte, which I guess is Patrick's hometown, he started hesitating on his three pointers in that game. And it seems like ever since then, he's been in his head slightly more with shooting threes, which is crazy because he was like going into that game, I think he was shooting like 45% on threes or something like that. And the other way that that manifests is he travels a lot when he catches the ball and then stops to think about it and then decides to drive on a closeout instead of just shooting the ball. Like, I feel like he gets called for that, that foot shuffle, travel, a ton.
It happened tonight. And, I think.
Yeah, no, I mean, it happened. I feel like it happens once every other game.
Yeah.
And, has, you know, kind of picked up in frequency as he's gotten more hesitant to just launch. And so I would just like to see him be a little bit more decisive and turn the dial up on his aggressiveness a little bit. But I don't think he was really the problem at all in this game. I can get into what I think were the problems, but I'll let you pick whatever topic you want to go to next. I was gonna say about Patrick.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, talk about problems, and you mentioned Lowry in terms of like the weakness stuff. We can go to Lowry now. He was terrible tonight. 9 points, 3 of 8 shooting, 0-4 from three, 4 rebounds, zero other, like, no stocks, that's no assists, no steals, no blocks. He did have no turnovers, and they had 3 fouls. I think those were all in the first half. So this is a complete dud of a game from him. And that was after we got all the stories about, is this a new Lowry marketing? And obviously this has been a hot topic for the Bulls after back-to-back 30-point games, and he's played, what, I think, is it 12 games now this year? 13, because he missed some time, but he was up 20 points per game before tonight, back-to-back 30-point games, like I mentioned, shooting over 50% overall, 40% from three. But, I mean, even going back to that other Knicks, the first Knicks game, the Knicks shut him down in the fourth quarter. He had 30 points, like, midway through the third and then didn't score again, and then absolutely shut out tonight. And I think we saw just one of the big issues with Lowry Markkanen. If his three-point shot is not falling, if he's not able to get free for and knocking down shots, he is just cannot impact the game in other ways. He was bad defensively. Again, zero assists, no steals, no blocks, just doing nothing in the score sheet. Only had four rebounds, did not have any offensive rebounds. There was one possession I pointed out on Twitter where Elfrid Payton took up a terrible mid-range shot. Should have been an easy rebound, and he got out-hustled the ball by Mitchell Robinson and forced, and the ball ended up going back to the Knicks. Just like inexcusable effort, and I think it was kind of like that all night. The Knicks made a great adjustment from last game. They were switching on those screens when they were doing high pick and rolls. They were staying attached to him, not letting him get open looks. And he was never comfortable, and he never did anything. Did not make an was not assertive at all. He did have the one nice dunk where he actually finished a power dunk, which he like never does. It's kind of funny. He actually did it in a game where he was terrible. But yeah, again, this is just the problem with Lauri Markkanen. Like we've seen this act before, which is why I think we all need. I know Kevin. I know you are basically out on him. I still think he could be a little better than what he's been the first 3 years, but. I mean, this is just kind of the microcosm of his whole career. He has a few big games, but then a team focuses on him, they play hard defense on him, and he totally disappears and gives you nothing else.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was just going to say, Mark Karantsoulis, our friend from Bulls HQ, he put out a tweet that I thought was pretty instructive about this in terms of, you know, everybody getting on board the Lowry train or whatever, and it was comparing his 14-game run in February of the year that he was with Boylan, where everybody was like, oh, is he making the leap? And then it turned out, no, he just had a hot run. And basically, it was all driven by his shooting. And then his stats, like, per 100 were virtually identical, right down to, like, the shooting percentages and everything to start this year. And that's all it is. It's, like, he's just on a hot shooting streak. And he's done this before, and then as soon as the shooting goes away, it's like, what else does he give you? And I think that, like, tonight in particular, like, Ricky pointed out that the Bulls actually didn't turn the ball over as much this tonight as they usually do, and they actually won the turnover battle with the Knicks pretty handily, actually. But, like, they still got crushed on extra possessions and the possession battle, because Lowry was getting his ass kicked by Mitchell Robinson all night on the defensive glass. Like, I think Mitchell Robinson had three offensive rebounds, but, like, the Knicks as a team had double the offensive rebounds that the Bulls did. And I think their offensive rebound percentage was, like, more than double what the Bulls was. And he's just soft, man. Like, I it's a cliche to call, like, European players soft, and, like, most of them aren't, but this dude, he's soft, man. Like, he doesn't play like Thibodeau used to always talk about playing with thrust and playing with force. And Lowry just does not play with any of that. And I thought he was a huge reason why the Bulls lost tonight, because they just, even when they would play, you know, decent enough defense to force a miss, they just couldn't get the offensive rebound because he was not boxing anybody out. And then, like, I think the other big problem tonight was Kobe, but that's like a part of a broader trend. He's not very good.
Yeah, I thought that this would have been a big spot for Markkanen to, like, show that his scoring and his shooting has been sustainable. Totally agree with the discussion so far. I do think that Markkanen's having the best year of his career. And I think that in a lot of ways, like, he's still a young player. There is always going to be, like, growing pains in terms of adjustment. The league, and God knows, throughout his first 3 years, Markkanen really made no noticeable improvements in any area. This season, he was finally shooting closer to his reputation. It's like, yeah, this is what this guy's supposed to be. We were calling him Finnish Ryan Anderson when he drafted here. But the problem is he's never actually shot at that level. So just to see him finally, I think tonight he entered the game at like 41% from three. I was starting to get optimistic that, like, okay, well, maybe he's not just an average shooter. Maybe he really is someone who is, you know, clearly above average and borderline, like, really good shooter for that size. But these are the type of games where, like, he needs to respond. And I don't want to overreact too much because the Bulls just had a cold shooting night in a lot of ways today. But, on a night when the offense was really struggling, this would have been a good time for Lowry to be like, all right, let's just run the two-man game with Zach and I, and our two-man game is going to be your two-man game. It's the Knicks. It's not, like, that much to ask, really. In a lot of these games, the Bulls are going to have a clear talent disadvantage in terms of their best players against the oppositions. But, you know, tonight, he was just manhandled by Randle. And, you know, this is an example of, like, a few years ago, we were talking about, or even last year, we were talking about, like, can Lowry
be an all-star? Does he have that kind of upside? So, like, you want to see what a fringe all-star in the East looks like? It looks like Julius Randle, and he whooped his ass today, straight up. So, really disappointing performance for Lowry. I'm not going to overreact to it too much because I do think, in general, this has been Lowry's best year. We have been waiting for Lowry to become this type of player. But at the end of the day, he's still not that exceptional in any way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you bring up Randle, and I mean, Randle had 27, 6, and 6, and 2 steals tonight. I mean, the passing, I think he's averaging like 4 or 5. He's averaging 6 assists per game. So he's at 22, 11, and 6 for the season. I mean, how long would it take Lowry to get 6 assists? I don't even know if he has 6 assists this season, to be honest. Like, he's probably right around there. I know that's like not his game at all, and never has never been his game, but I mean, it's just like not totally non-existent. And for the Bulls who, like, well, let me see, I'm counting it. Okay, Lowry had 4 assists in the opener, but like since he came back, I think Lowry has like 7 total assists in like 8 or 9 games. So like, he just can do nothing with really the ball in his hands himself. Like, he's still set up, I think almost 80% of his baskets, I believe, are assisted. So like, I think they've done some nice things. Billy's done some nice things with this offense, like getting him going on the move, taking advantage of some mismatches, and he is shooting really well inside the arc as well. Like, even tonight, he was 3 of 4 on 2-pointers, so that his 2-point percentage continues to go up. He just couldn't hit a 3, but in general, like, especially if he's covered well, like, he can't like go against a good defense and like go get a bucket for himself. He's still got to be set up all the time. So like, and then like I said, the no playmaking on either end of the court. Like I said, it's just major question. So then if we want to look at the big picture, then like, if he does shoot like still decent the rest of the way, he's not going to shoot like 50% all year, I'm sure. I feel like he's not going to be like a 50-40-90 guy, but I mean, if he put averages whatever around these numbers all year, like, I mean, someone's probably going to give him $20 million, right? It only takes one team, and with more cap space out there,
all it takes is one asshole.
I would feel bad losing him for nothing, but like, I mean, do you pay Lowry Markkanen $20+ million? And it's like, ugh. And you got to look at possibly trading him. I don't know. It's like a really weird situation. The timing's all goofy with him and all that kind of stuff. So it's a tough spot for the Bulls right now with him, because it's just, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that like, I would not, like, I would rather pay Zach his max in 2 years than pay Lowry that kind of money, because at least with Zach, like, you've seen improvements like every year that he's been in the league. His playmaking has really like come along a lot this year, like running in a real offense that like gets him going downhill and, you know, gets movement away from the ball to provide in passing windows. And his scoring is absolutely elite. Like give me that guy, and you know, I'm willing to pay like actual market price for Zach. But I don't think that's, you know, guys that score and don't really do much else are all that valuable, especially with Lowry, because it's so reliant on his 3-point shooting, which has been frankly like pretty unreliable. Like, I know that we're saying that he's having his best season so far, but like, I won't believe that he's a 40% 3-point shooter until he's done it for, you know,
isn't
something like, until he's like done it for like 200 attempts or something like that, because we've seen these hot streaks before, and like 3-point shooting is like the most volatile statistic out there, and this is what his reputation has been, so like, you want to buy into it. But it's also been 3 years where he's been like a league average 3-point shooter. And when you factor in the ease of his looks, he's been like below average. And it's just like, I'm not paying that guy $20 million a year. And like, so I think they should trade him, honestly. It sucks that he had a bad game here, because like, they need him to continue to be on a heater for as long as he's on the team, and then try to get something for him. Because I don't think you can commit to that guy. He hasn't gotten better in any of his weaknesses. And I don't buy that the shooting is real. Not yet, yeah, anyways.
I think, like, you know, even if he gives you 40% 3-point shooting or 41% 3-point shooting, I mean, that should be, like, the minimum we're expecting from him, first of all, because that, like, is his whole game. And second of all, even if the shooting is real, he's still not that impactful. So I fully agree that it's hard to see him as a long-term piece on this team. Now, I do think there could be something to the idea of signing him to trade him later. Like, you don't just want to lose him for nothing. we've been arguing about Lauri Markkanen's league-wide value for 3-4 years at this point, so we have no idea what his value is because we've, you know, never seen him be traded or actually be a serious part of rumors. But in terms of him as a long-term piece, I think his days were numbered as soon as they drafted Pat. Like, Pat, to me, was always going to be more of a four. They have been playing him quite a bit straight on the wing this year, but, you know, I still think that Pat's probably his defensive strong suit is providing paint protection and, you know, supplemental rim protection. Lowry is just so weak defensively, and that's what kills you. Like, he has not improved on that end at all. I swear to God, every offseason we're doing muscle watch with Lauri Markkanen while he's flexing his biceps, but how many times do you see that strength actually pay off on the court? It never happens. And he got, like I said, overpowered today by Randall, who, you know, is not a player who's particularly long. He got totally outplayed by Mitchell, who is a freak physically and athletically, but Mitchell Robinson. Just a frustrating performance out of him. And Kevin, how do you feel about the Lonzo rumors? You know, a potential Lowry for Lonzo deal. Lonzo's got his own problems, but I'm just curious where you stand on that right now. Do you think Lonzo would be a good fit? And, you know, what do you think about that?
I think Lonzo would be a bit better fit for the Bulls roster, like as it's currently constructed. And, you know, I think Lonzo is, I wonder what the market will be for Lonzo too. Cause I mean, you run up against the same issue of a lot of teams having cap space, and not a lot of good players out there to throw it at. So like, I wouldn't want to overpay for Lonzo either. Because you know, he's a, you know, point guard who can't really dribble. And Bulls already have one of those with Kobe White. Lonzo's a good passer. And he's like connective tissue on offense. And he's, you know, a pretty good defensive player, for his position. But like, I don't know. I don't know. You know, like, I guess I would do it just because I would rather have almost anything than have to worry about paying Lauri Markkanen. But yeah, I don't know. Lonzo's jumper is real shaky. And it's just hard to have, you know, he's basically like, Lonzo is like kind of like Ben Simmons. If Ben Simmons was shorter and, couldn't dribble, which is like a pretty tough player. And obviously also not the defender that Simmons is just because he's not as big. So I don't know. I guess I would do it just because, like I said, I really don't put a very high value on, what Lowry brings to the table. Which is, you know, basically just scoring and that's really it. I think the other thing that like people love scoring so much, but like, I think the thing that people really need to understand is that like, not all 20 points per game is created equally. Like, if your 20 points per game does not is not being leveraged to create opportunities and create easy looks for your teammates, it's really just not that impactful. Even if you individually are very efficient, like this was the thing for Zach up until like the last year or so, was that like he was an incredibly efficient individual scorer. But he was really bad on defense and he was not a playmaker. Like he didn't see the floor particularly well. And Boylan's offense, or lack thereof, didn't really like provide much opportunity for him to develop that skill set because it was very stagnant. But yeah, it's just not that impactful. Like you look at all the impact statistics, if you know, do little regressions on guys that score a lot of points but don't provide playmaking, their offensive impact is pretty muted compared to the guys that bring the scoring and the playmaking. And it's just also really tough to have a guy like Lowry that doesn't that plays a big man spot and doesn't defend like at all.
Yeah, I mean, if you look, even look, I'm pulling up the on off numbers right now, and obviously those can be wonky a bit, but Lowry's played 400 some minutes so far in his 13 games. Bulls have an offensive rating of 105 with him. Again, some of that can be contextual with teammates and all that, but still, what, like, for like as efficient as he has been scoring, for the Bulls to be that bad as a team when he's on the court, like that, I think that kind of speaks to what you're saying, that like even if he's like hitting shots and doing all that, like he's not raising the level of the entire team like at all. And obviously there's the defensive problem. So it's a problem. It's an issue for sure. So I guess in this case, then, like, say it did come down to, like, if you did trade Lowry for Lonzo, I mean, I guess if you're, like, looking at that, if that's on the table, you can basically swap them. Like, I guess, would, if it, like, in a vacuum, like, who are you taking? If they were, if they were, like, the same amount of money, like, I'm curious what offers, like, either will get if they do, once they hit restricted free agency, like, would you take, like, just straight up Lonzo over Lowry at this point? Probably, maybe, I guess. I don't know. Because Lonzo is really interesting. Like, I don't know. That situation in New Orleans has been super weird this year. They've been really disappointing. I feel like the fit there, and like they've slowed the game down. I know their pace is much lower than it was last season under Gentry, and they've been playing a lot slower. And like that is just not Lonzo's game, like the half court game. Like I'm curious, like if he came to the Bulls, like playing off Zach, the Bulls have been playing a bit more up tempo. Like I wonder if that would get him in rhythm more. Maybe get him a few more transition opportunities. I'm curious if maybe that would be a better fit. And we know the Bulls need defense, a perimeter defense. And we've talked about at the top that Zach and Kobe together is brutal. If you put Zach and Lonzo together, like maybe that would be like just a better overall fit for the team moving forward. I would certainly consider it. I'm not totally sure. Like I said, I wouldn't feel great about paying either of them what they're probably going to get. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I fully agree with you right there. One thing with Lonzo is that he's battled a lingering knee issue the entire season. So I'm curious if that's the reason why he hasn't been able to shoot this year. Last year, he seemed to make pretty significant improvements as an outside shooter. His three-point rate is still really high, and it's because, like Kevin said, he basically puts no pressure on the rim as someone who can, like, drive and collapse a defense. And that's why, in a lot of ways, Lonzo's passing is only so valuable, because he can't really bend the defense to create advantage situations for his teammates. Instead, he's more of, like, a ball mover, and he's a guy who will get a lot of hockey assists, and he's a guy who can, you know, just help the offense achieve more flow. There's value to that, but like what the Bulls actually need is a guy at the controls offensively to sort of take some of that burden off Zach. Now, Zach has been better than at any point in his career this year, I think, at running the offense, at, you know, seeing the full floor in terms of where his teammates are and reading the help. And, you know, having someone like Thad Young as a safety valve really takes a lot of pressure off him. I thought Stefan Noh wrote a great thing a couple days ago on Thad, sort of comparing his playmaking on the 4-on-3 when they trap the ball handler after a pick and roll to Draymond Green. So, you know, just giving Zach like another guy like that has been super, super helpful. In a lot of ways, Thad has basically become the point guard for this team. I mean, it's either Thad creating the shots or Zach creating the shots. But at the end of the day, you need someone who can get those looks to you consistently from the perimeter in crunch time situations. And Zach, we've seen it throughout his career, even throughout this season when he has been better, he just sort of melts down in crunch time. And he had another bad three-point attempt, I should say, today in crunch time. Certainly, like, Zach was one of the only guys who could actually score tonight. He is a really efficient scorer in general, so it's not like one bad shot attempt was the reason the Bulls lost the game. But in general, you know, the Bulls' biggest problem is just that lack of primary playmaker, primary initiator. And while Zach has taken strides in that, you know, I think he's still more of a secondary.
Yeah. Kevin, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I totally agree with what Ricky said. Also agree with the plug for Stefan's piece. It was really good. Stefan also linked to a really good video from Adam Spinella on YouTube that like broke down the Bulls playbook essentially and showed like some of their sets that they use the most and how Billy Donovan has been basically trying to get their ball handlers downhill. Related to the Lonzo question, I was going to say, like, if they did trade for Lonzo, I think it might be a little tough in the short term because like so much of what the Bulls are doing right now is predicated on, having a lot of guys that can get downhill when they have the ball in their hands. And like, they're not like all great at it, but like they can at least dribble, pass and shoot for the most part. And not maybe the passing not being where it needs to be. And some of the dribbling hasn't been as clean as it needs to be. But like Lonzo not being able to dribble, I think would be kind of a tough fit in a scheme that is like basically the primary offensive action is a high pick and roll with some disguising of it with a spread floor, and they run it with, you know, Pat runs the pick the as the ball handler sometimes. Zach and Kobe obviously both run it a lot, but I think that that's another reason why maybe the Lonzo thing is kind of a pipe dream, just because I think that it, you know, from the things that Karnišovas has said, it seems like he wants guys that can dribble, pass, and shoot, and like, cool, like, so does every GM, but I don't know, like, Lonzo can really only do one of those things, and he's great at it, he's a really good passer, but he's, you know, his shot, his, he's had one good season where he shot well. Maybe the knee injury is causing him to regress on his shooting, and maybe it'll come back once he gets healthy. But, you know, it's tough to go on that. And, yeah, he just really can't dribble at all.
You know what I was thinking? Like, we've spent too much time talking about Lonzo because he's not on the Bulls. That is, like, sort of a pipe dream. But I'm curious if anyone else has any other suggestions for potential guard candidates the Bulls can look at. I think, you know, Lowry in a sign and trade this offseason would be ideal. I'm thinking about other restricted free agents who were sign and trade guys going from one team to another. And a move that I didn't really – I wasn't campaigning for it at the time, but, man, in hindsight, it would have been a brilliant deal would have been to get Malcolm Brogdon. And Brogdon was someone who in Milwaukee was playing totally off the ball. He was a 50-40-90 shooter, basically spotting up off Giannis's drives to the basket, goes to the Pacers in the sign and trade, and he's been like just a classic floor general for them. Totally changed his role. He's basically an all-star level performer. I believe he got 4 years, $80 million, which is the same contract that got. That was an offseason when the Bulls had a bunch of money. They ended up signing Thad and Sato, and you know, that's worked out to varying degrees. At least Thad's been really good this year, but you know, is there anyone else out there who could maybe, you know, they could benefit from a role change the way that Brogdon did? Or is there just like anyone besides for Lonzo, who's obviously been in trade rumors lately, that we think could be a potentially good guard candidate to look for in a Lowry deal?
In a Lowry deal or just in general?
Either. In general.
We've got Mike Conley listed here, but the Jazz have been awesome, and he's been incredible.
Yeah, he's not getting dealt.
Yeah, he's definitely not going anywhere this year. Like, I think he's going to be a free agent, but I don't know. Like, we got like a Kemba. Yeah, so they looked into Kemba in the offseason, but I doubt it. Yeah, Lowry's going to be a free agent, but I don't know if he's going
anywhere. Kemba is – I just want to chime in on the Kemba thing. Kemba is washed. His knee is messed up, and he – I don't think, you know – but feel free to crop this out and make me look stupid on Twitter for it later. But like, he's a little guard. He's 30 years old. He's a guy that relies on his speed, and he just had a knee injury, and he hasn't really looked the same since. I think he's washed.
Do we want to go after Rubio? I mean, Rubio's numbers have been atrocious this year, averaging under 6 points a game. Obviously, Minnesota's horrible. They're arguably the worst team in the league. So, you know, maybe you could get a free look at Rubio.
Yeah, Chris just mentioned here Dinwiddie. I know people have talked about like, Thad Young to the Nets, Dinwiddie, and like maybe some draft picks. Like, that wouldn't be a bad idea. Maybe, and the Nets obviously need some depth. They need some toughness, some defense, an actual big man who can do anything. Thad would probably be great there, especially playing with all those other studs. And like, I'm curious what they. Dinwiddie's obviously like an odd man out there. Yeah, he mentioned he's a player option. But and then coming off this injury, like who knows? But maybe a couple second round picks along with Dinwiddie, those contracts do match up. Maybe if he opts out and you re-sign him and he comes back from, like, obviously the ACL injury is not as bad as it used to be back in the day. And maybe he comes back and he's all good, and like he's not the best. I know he takes some bad some tough shots, but like he's still pretty damn good. Would probably be the best point guard on the roster. So I mean, that's at least interesting to me, because obviously the Nets could certainly use a guy like Thad Young.
Yeah, I just think it's so tough because like somebody like Dinwiddie he's like a good player, but like he's you know, not really a great floor general in a way that like Brogdon has become. He's more of like a score first guy. Yeah. And like the guys like Brogdon, they're just really hard to find. And then once a team finds them, like they're not giving them up generally because like really efficient guys that, are willing to be role flexible and do whatever you need, and are young. Like it still boggles my mind that the Bucks just kind of let him go for like a sign and trade for like a couple of picks, because he was like obviously very good, and there was really no reason that they had to do it other than to save money for their owners. And you know, we know about that in Chicago, but it's that's the name of the podcast, right? But yeah, it's just those guys are really, really hard to find, and I also just don't think that like a Dinwiddie level player is really that much of an improvement over what the Bulls have. Like, it's an improvement, but I don't know. It's
not like a legit, like big time long term answer. I mean, I think at this point, I don't know if there is that answer unless they trade
Bradley Beal.
Yeah, I know we have talked about we've talked about that in our chat. Yeah, there you go. The Beal thing. Which, I mean, why not? Like I know the Wizards right now. Like, Beal doesn't want to get traded. The Wizards are looking a little better lately. They beat the Heat tonight, who the Heat are kind of a hot mess right now, but they've played a little better lately. Beal doesn't want to go anywhere. They're not going. The Wizards are not going anywhere. Like,
they stink.
They're hopeless. They're going to be, I don't know how they'll improve to contender level with Beal there over the next year or two. Like, you have to think a trade's coming at some point. You just have to imagine it. So, like, why not throw together a big offer? The Bulls have, like, all their draft picks. They if they've done anything well, it's, like, not, like, throw their picks away for, like, dumb shit. So, like, at least they have a ton of picks they could throw in trades. I mean, you have Kobe White you could throw in a trade. You have Lowry you could throw into a trade. Like, throw together a nice offer for Bradley Beal. Why not?
Yeah, they might need to put Kobe on ice, though, if they want to trade him for anything valuable, because he's been playing like absolute trash lately.
Yeah, absolutely true. Here's a question from Shane. What do we want to happen with the Vets at the deadline? I'd meant to get to this, so that's perfect. So, like, we've talked about Thad and how great he's been. It's insane how good Thad Young has been. They've completely changed his role from – he was basically just a floor spacer under Borland. It's unreal, like, how – misused he was. And now he's basically like point forward style like Draymond. He's been running the middle of the floor. They get him in the middle and he's whipping passes to shooters all over the court. I mean, and his shooting percentage has been super high. That little floater he's got is like unstoppable. It's like automatic. He's shooting almost 60% this season after his 9-of-11 performance tonight. So like his value is got to be high. I mean, you got to be able to get, you'd think he's, I saw someone tweet today that he might be like the best guy available at the deadline. So, I mean, someone will hopefully be able to throw out a first-round pick. I know I mentioned the Nets thing as well, but, I mean, you'd have to think, especially the Bulls, like, they're going to be in the mix for the play-in tournament. You look at the other teams around them, the Knicks, the Cavs, the Hornets. We'll see if the Wizards get back into it. I think the Raptors will come up. We'll see about the Heat, but I think the Bulls will be in that mix. But I think, like, you have to obviously also think long-term here. Like, you can't, like, just, like, hold on to your Vets just for, like, an ill-fated play-in tournament run to get washed in the first round. Like, if you can get a first round pick for Thad Young, you probably got to do it. So I guess I'm sure you guys agree with me that the Bulls, and we've talked about this before, the Bulls should still be in asset acquisition mode. Like, that means trading Thad, that means trading Otto Porter, who was out today. Otto Porter's back injury is like flaring up every other game. He's the oldest 27-year-old I've ever seen in my life. So I guess you guys' thoughts on Thad Young, the trade deadline, what they should do with the Vets, because obviously we know, as we've seen, the Bulls, like those guys, Thad, Garrett Temple, the Vets, they've kind of propped up the young core because the young core has been bad as a group together.
When the Bulls trade Thad, assuming it happens, they're going to tank down the standings so fast, man. And tank the bad word here, because I don't think it'll be from lack of effort. It's going to be from lack of execution. That is really the glue for this team on both ends of the floor. And, you know, if he is the best available player at the trade deadline, I would love to see other teams get in a bidding war for him, because I do think that, you know, he guards Giannis well. If you're a team like the Nets, I don't know if the Nets have any picks left that they can actually trade. I don't think they do. But, you know, if you're an Eastern Conference team that, like, wants to go through Milwaukee, who better to go after than Thad Young? So, yeah, I would absolutely trade him. Then the Bulls will lose some games. They'll still have the benefit of, like, you know, the start to the season was still interesting, and with the way the lottery is done now, you don't need to be towards the very bottom of the league to jump up in the lottery standing. So I would absolutely trade that. I agree that I think that Lowry should also be on the table. Otto, for sure, trade him if you can find anyone to take him. I think that Otto can still help a good team too, so hopefully there's some sort of tangible value coming back there. But at this point, like, why would you want Otto to be re-signed in the offseason? While he is super vital to the Bulls being more of a respectable team on the floor. He's just such an unreliable player at this point. I totally agree with everything you said, Jason, about him being the oldest 27-year-old ever. So, yeah, I think you got to move him for multiple reasons. It's a good move. And also, from Thad's perspective, as someone who is a Thad Young fan, I want to see him playing in games with stakes, you know, playing against veterans, not being surrounded by 19 and 20-year-olds. And it's going to be cool to see Thad go to a good team if and when it happens.
Yeah, I just jumping in to say that I am in full agreement that, you know, it's been nice to see the vets prop up the Bulls and get to see, like, somewhat competent play, at least on the offensive side. The defense is a total mess, but, you know, the vets can't do everything. I think some of that's also scheme based, but I don't want to get into that right now. But just to say that I think that, yeah, you move the vets for all the reasons that you guys said. Like, Thad deserves to play in games that matter, and like that actually have stakes. And I think he's been, you know, the good soldier in Chicago. I think, you know, you earn some goodwill around the league by moving him to a contender. I think the only challenge with moving the vets and potentially Lowry for assets is that, like, all of these teams that would, like, potentially trade for guys have already basically, like, burnt through all their asset base, right? Like, most of the contenders that would be kind of in the Thad sweepstakes are, you know, pretty asset poor because they've, I think,
Boston.
Yeah, Boston is kind of like they're the one that's kind of out there, I think, because they have the traded player exception, so they could just take Thad for no salary to send back, and I think they actually still have picks because Danny Ainge hasn't, like, he's almost made a million deals, but it hasn't actually traded them, so that's the destination, but, like, that's for Thad. I don't know where you would potentially send Otto or Lowry. Maybe Lowry you send to one of these crappy teams that has cap space for next year and just, like, let them get, like, the inside track on trying to sign him. Like, yeah. I don't know, maybe the Knicks are interested or the Cavs. I don't know. They have, like, a million centers, but most of them are good defensively, so they might be nice pairings with Lowry.
I don't know. Will, you requested to talk. Let's get you in here. Your thoughts.
What's up, guys? I wanted to make my my second straight appearance on Cash. I think that's a record.
Oh, yeah. So
I deserve a trophy or something. But well, we were just talking about, like, you know, floor general and who the Bulls can go after point guard wise. And Thad, I think, is providing a lot of that for the Bulls right now. But I thought it would be a good segue into Ricky's mock draft. And Sharif Cooper, who I think the Bulls should definitely look at if he falls to them. Versus, like, the value of trading that pick. So I was curious to hear, Ricky, your thoughts about, obviously you had them drafting Moody, Sharif Cooper pretty high, which, you know, I think a lot of people are pretty turned off by the shooting numbers. So, wanted to hear your thoughts about all that.
Yeah. I think part of me believes that if you're going to keep Zach, it would probably be in your best interest, like, sign Zach to another contract. I think it's in your best interest to try to get a veteran point guard because it's just going to be tough, even if, like, Sharif Cooper's very good, which I think it possibly is. He's still, you know, going to be a 20-year-old point guard. So that adjustment to the league, I think, takes a while. If he were available, I would think long and hard about him. I think that he has a really unique ability to create shots for other players. I think he is effortless in terms of getting to his spots on the floor, and he just has, like, a special knack for getting guys open. And then on top of that, he's able to get his own scoring by getting to the free throw line. His free throw rate is absolutely out of control this year. His assist rate, the highest since they started keeping data in, like, 2009, 2010. So his numbers look very good. Obviously, he's very small. He's going to be a one-position defender, and even that feels generous to call him that in the NBA. He's about 6'1", 220. He's not a especially explosive athlete around the basket. He's a below-the-rim player for sure, but what he's good at is bending the defense to his will in finding, lanes for open passes. And in his high school career, Sharif had a monster reputation as a scorer. His passing was something of a question mark, I think, coming into his debut with Auburn this season once he got eligible to play. And his passing has just been a total revelation this early into the season. So I think, you know, the shooting is highly questionable. I believe I had him at 7th in that mock draft, but I'll say, like, I feel like the top five are the top five. And then, just to be clear, that would be Cade Cunningham, Evan Mobley, Jalen Suggs, and then the two G League Ignite guys, Jalen Green, Jonathan Kuminga. After that, I feel like it's very fluid, 6 through 14. So it is possible that, you know, Sharif could still be there if the Bulls are picking in the double digits. And yeah, I would think long and hard about taking him because he has an ability to get guys open and get them the ball. And the Bulls don't have anyone like that right now. With that being said, I do think it's probably in the Bulls' best long-term interest to try to acquire a veteran point guard, and then maybe draft a wing if you're going to keep Zach.
I think that makes sense. I just feel like, when I watched, and I've watched, not a ton of his tape so far, but, just the passing is really special, and I think we can all agree that's something that the Bulls absolutely need if they're going to go anywhere, frankly. I just kind of want, Jason and I were talking about this the other day, is, how do you find that guy? If it's not through, if it's just, waiting around year after year to get that guy in the draft, or maybe you, package picks and Kobe and Lowry for Beal and then see if you can attract a free agent. It's just it's a curious time. I'm seeing some comments in the discussion about Felicio's contract and things like that. Thad is 13, Satoransky is at 10, Felicio is at 7. These are all very tradable contracts. And so we're obviously going to see something soon. I think that'll determine whether they go for that point guard or not, like you're kind of saying.
But you know what, though, Will? When it comes to Sharif Cooper, I mean, why not? You know what I mean?
That's kind of, because it's that's never a bad thing to have.
Yeah. I think that, there are a lot of questions about him, but the guy's a magician. And I wrote in the mock that he reminds me of Trae Young without the shooting ability. And I think that, there's obvious differences, but the way that Trae has learned how to draw fouls this year, Sharif also has a special knack for drawing fouls. Trey's just such a good live dribble passer. Sharif has that too. And I think that Sharif has really good scoring instincts, even though teams are going to go way under on the pick and roll on him early in his career. You have to invest in strength training and skill development coaches to try to, get him to shoot. But yeah, Sharif is a really interesting player. And yeah, I guess in my head, I was thinking that a wing would be best for them, but they need the engine of the offense. They don't have it. Sharif has more potential to be that guy than anyone outside of Cade Cunningham. And because he's so small and he can't shoot, he might actually slip to where you are. So yeah, right. I have to talk myself into it.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously the option is definitely there, but you, not to spoil the article, everybody should definitely go read that, but you had him taking Moses Moody. Tell me about him a little bit, because I haven't watched some of the film.
Yeah, Moody's interesting. So Moody played at Mount Verd in high school with Cade Cunningham. They were the starting backcourt together. Daron Sharp, the center on North Carolina, was also on that team. It was I wrote an article on them last year calling it the most talented high school team ever. They were totally loaded. I thought that Moody was a perfect backcourt complement to Cade because he's a 6'6 wing, 7'1 wingspan. He's not a super bursty athlete. He's more of a guy who's gonna get his points on catch and shoots. I think he's definitely going to have to be a very good shooter in the league to return top 10 value. I think it's possible that he is a very good shooter, though. He put up good numbers at the high school level so far this year. I think he's been around 36%, but obviously the jump from being capable to elite in shooting, it's tough to do, and you got to bet on someone to do it. He seems like a decent bet to me. So, yeah, he's not a freaky athlete. I think he's more long and smooth than he is like a super explosive guy who's going to go above the rim and, you know, draw a lot of contact. But I think, you know, he gives you the ability to hit catch and shoot threes. I think he gives you the ability to put the ball on the floor for one or two dribble pull-ups. He just has some pretty crafty scoring tricks around the basket. And then defensively, he's really long. I mean, 6'6 wing with a 7'1 wingspan. He isn't a power athlete by any means in terms of like being like a strong guy who's going to play with a lot of force. But, you know, I think his length is definitely beneficial. And I don't really know how high his ceiling is. I think it is mostly going to be dependent on how good of a shooter he turns into. But if the Bulls have the 11th pick in this draft and someone like that is on the table, I think, you know, just having that length and that ability to play off the ball, maybe he could be like a poor man's Mikal Bridges with maybe a little bit more dribble pull-up game. So I don't know if he'll be quite that good defensively, but that's sort of the vision with him, I think, is an off-ball 3-and-D wing. And those guys are really valuable. Like, certainly right now, we would all take Mikal over Carter, right? I mean, I'm not totally out on Carter at all. But Mikal's proven himself to be a better player in the league than Wendell has thus far. And just like the thought of having a super long wing who knocks down a bunch of threes and spaces the floor for you, like that's really valuable. Every team needs that. Now, those guys are less valuable when you don't have the engine of the offense. And the Bulls still don't have the engine of the offense. But Moody's been on my radar because I just saw him playing with Cade on Montverde. And he's had a pretty good year this year. I mean, he's had some very good games and some games where he sort of disappeared. But I think he's got the physical tools. I wish he was more of a power athlete. The way Pat is, he's not. But that's sort of my brief synopsis on him. I think he's definitely a guy who they would have to think about if he's on the board when they pick.
Ricky, this is from Jordan in the comments here. Thoughts on Jaden Springer? I believe he's from Tennessee.
Yeah, really like Jaden Springer. So Jaden Springer's another guy who I've been on since high school. He played at another Florida-based prep powerhouse, IMG Academy, which is where they actually had the WNBA bubble last year. You know, just one of these high schools that plays a national schedule. He's at Tennessee right now. Jaden Springer is a high school player, had a monster rep as a scorer, as a competitor. He led IMG, I think, as a junior. He went on a huge tear in the playoffs of, like, the Geico national mythical national championship. So he's been on my radar for a while. In terms of how he's playing this year at Tennessee is super elite defensively. I think they're number two in the country. Springer is a big part of that. He has always been a lockdown on ball defender with really good instinct. You'll see the way he like digs into the paint and still recovers out to the shooter at the arc, I think is really impressive. Offensively, he's kind of a guy who's not a pure point. He's sort of like you probably want to play him next to a more natural distributor. So he's sort of like one of these guys that's like a combo on off ball guy. But I think what makes him intriguing is that he's just a bulldozer going to the rim. For a 6'4 guard, he's strong as hell, and he's able to create separation with spin moves and by absorbing body contact and getting pretty good looks at the rim. He's been hitting his threes early in the season, but I think that that's going to be a question mark for him. Like, can he actually be a volume 3-point shooter? I like his dribble pull-up game a little bit, even though Tennessee doesn't play with a ton of spacing, so you haven't gotten to see him get into a ton of flow this year. It's been sort of hard to evaluate his offense because Tennessee's offense in general is so poor. But I like Jaden Springer. ESPN had him in the late 30s of their mock. I had him in the top 10 of mine. In terms of my preseason evaluation of Springer, I think I had him 6 and I moved him to 8 when I did this mock today after, you know, a couple months of the college basketball season. So I don't think that Springer is anywhere in Sharif Cooper's range in terms of being a natural playmaker, but I think he can give you scoring going to the basket. And I think that that can have some gravity, and he's a good enough passer to make the right read when the defense collapses. I love his defense. He's just a competitor. He's also super young. He's the youngest player in this draft, pretty much. So, you know, the Bulls went with that route last year when they took Pat, who after the Thunder sent down Poku today, Pat is the youngest player in the league right now. because Poku's going to the G League, I believe. So, you know, if they were to take Springer, it would be following that path of just taking the youngest guy, betting on the physical tools. I think he has the right mindset. I think he has a lot of things going for him as a guard, but certainly he's not the magician that Cooper is with the ball.
Thank you for that. I rely so heavily on you and Brian for the draft updates, but you said something that was interesting to me with regards to Cooper, which was like, if you want to keep Zach, you have to go find a veteran point guard because it's going to take a while to like learn the game as a 20-year-old point guard and the timeline kind of doesn't match up. So like for me, I think it's just like a value play. Like, does it make more sense? I think I said this with Jason the other day, but does it make more sense to trade Zach or keep him based on whatever return you get or don't get? Like, just, but in terms of like what you guys either think or want they should do, what do you think in terms of trading Zach and going young, or like maybe something along the lines of the Beal idea where you're like getting another guy who's close to or in his prime and trying to pair him with Zach to like kind of get towards respectability?
So yeah, man, it's all about the value, right? Like, I think there's definitely a scenario where, you know, we've been debating what Zach and Lowry's trade value is for years, but it's like we still don't really know. So if you could get a fat package of picks and pick swaps for Zach LaVine, that's typically what stars go for now. I don't think that the Bulls necessarily want to do that and burn it all the way to the ground. I don't know if ownership's going to want to do that. I know that Reinsdorf agreed to trade Jimmy Butler, but I think like they probably like Zach because it's so stupid. But like, I honestly believe the front office like thought Butler was a diva and they thought he had an attitude problem. Whereas Zach's attitude is very much like, I'm a super hard worker. I'm going to grind. I'm going to work really hard in the offseason. So I would bet they don't want to trade Zach from a management perspective. I have no insight onto that. That's just me speculating. Personally, I would totally flip him if you can get great value for him in terms of a package of picks and pick swaps to be able to use as ammunition to rebuild the team. In terms of, you know, what I said about like wanting to pair Zach with a veteran point guard, like the more I think about it too, though, like you can always re-sign Zach and then trade him down the line. You're still going to need a player better than Zach, and you're still going to need A1 creator next to him anyway. So, yeah, you know, you probably don't want to be building your team with Zach LaVine in mind, even if you plan on re-signing him, because I think that you can always move him, and the Bulls have to be in talent acquisition mode now. Like, the Bulls' biggest problem is that they don't have enough high-end talent. And so that should be the main focus of the team, is just like trying to acquire more avenues towards getting a high-end talent.
Yeah, and we talked about this on our last pod with Will, and we've obviously talked about this before. Like, it was, I think we talked about it too, Ricky, just like how it is kind of like the Jimmy situation again, where it's like, okay, so if you did trade Zach, like you're just kind of back to where you were. Obviously, you still need like another really good player, but then you need another really good player. So like, I've been leaning more towards the I'm totally fine like giving him a max or near max deal, and then if you do have to trade him, like he'll be in his prime, like he'd be a tradable deal. So like, I wouldn't really worry about like overpaying Zach a bit. Maybe you are able to trade for somebody else, and then maybe you go. I know we've joked about like in 2023 going after Nikola Jokic and going after that. I mean, I know that's like a pipe dream kind of stuff, but like if you keep Zach and maybe you make a big trade, then you have a couple stars, maybe you get somebody else, who knows. But if it doesn't work out, then you could just trade him for something else. If you're trading him, whatever, he's 27 or 28, I think you could still get something really pretty good for him. So like, I don't think that'd be in a huge, like in a real bad spot if they overpaid Zach and paid him like $35 million a year. Obviously, they should look to make a move, especially if they're just kind of, the Bulls are just kind of meandering around kind of where they're at now. Like, if they can get a huge trade package, like, why not? We talked about, like, the looking at the Warriors, like, if they put the Timberwolves pick on the table. My guy Chris here asked, like, what's the lowest return you'd accept for Zach? So, Ricky, I see you said you had to hop off. So let's end it up, basically wrap up this conversation with this question. Like, what is the lowest you'd accept in a trade for Zach, like, before this deadline?
Yeah, let's all go around the horn with this because it's a great question. I don't really know. Like, what I would want is a package of picks and pick swaps. You know, there's been some rumors that Thibodeau really likes Zach. And we know that Thibodeau likes to target his former players for sure. And Zach did play a year under Thibodeau in Minnesota. So the Knicks have two first rounders this year. If they offered both of them to you for Zach, and they're both like, you know, let's say they're in the 11 to 14 range, but you get two of them, would you do that? Or the 8 to 14 range or something? I don't know. Like, I would want one of those picks, a pick next year, and a pick swap in the future. Like, two picks and a pick swap would probably be the lowest package I would want. And a team like the Knicks would be great. I'd love to, you know, fade the Knicks' future. So, you know, something like that would be good to me, but I'm curious what Kevin and Will and Jason think on this, too.
Kevin, you can go next on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think something like what Ricky just said, it makes the most sense. Like, I would want a lot for Zach, honestly, because I mentioned it earlier, but he's a guy that he really does get better every single year. And, like, he came into the league a really rough player because he was 19, he was a project. And really he just had like all this, insane skill talent, but didn't really know how to play basketball. And like, he's turned himself into like a legitimate offensive star. The defense is still, you know, not the greatest, but even that, I think he's improved a lot on this year. Like, I don't think Zach is really the problem with the defense this year. I think it's Lowry and Kobe primarily. They play the starters minutes, and I think you could get away and live with Zach playing defense the way that he does, but to pair him with Kobe and Lowry together just makes that unit completely untenable, especially with Wendell out, because Gafford doesn't rebound very well and chases blocks like crazy. So they just have a lot of guys that don't really know how to play defense. I'm getting on a tangent. I think I would want a lot for Zach. I would rather keep him unless I got, you know, a really, really big offer. I think that depending on where those picks for the Knicks land, you know, I might be interested in that. But like, the thing is we just did this whole thing, and Zach is not what Jimmy Butler was when we traded him. But Jimmy was like a top 10 player in the league, and was just entering his prime. The Bulls decided they didn't want to pay for his prime, even though he was under contract for two more years. And they, you know, sent him away. And we've just been watching garbage basketball ever since. And we have a guy, I think Zach, I would put Zach comfortably in the top 30 in the league now. And I don't really want to watch garbage basketball for another 5 years. And so unless there's like a real good plan to take those picks and turn them into a team that is good, like both fun to watch and good, like pretty immediately, I would really rather hold on to Zach and try to put guys around him rather than blowing it all up again.
Yeah, I agree with that, especially because there's just too much variance in the lottery now. Like, it's not a plan to just like be super bad and expect to get the first pick. Like, I just don't think that's really a viable plan. And the Bulls, like Kevin said, have pissed away too many years. So
yeah, I'm getting old, man. Yeah. I'm 35, or I'll be 35 this year. Like, I don't want to watch another 5 years of terrible basketball until I'm 40. Like, no, thank you.
Will, you know, I don't mean to project here. So if I'm wrong, please correct me, but I feel like you might be slightly more on the trade Zach bandwagon than Kevin is. So I'm curious what.
I go back and forth. You know, I think like the difference between the Zach and Jimmy situation. And by the way, like, I'm sure you guys have said this before, I'm stealing from somebody, but like, the Bulls could have just paid Jimmy what they're going to pay Zach now, and right, like, not been bad for 5 years. So I get the urgency to do that. I think the key here is that like, there is a little bit of urgency with the like direction of the team, because if you are going to trade Zach, you've also probably got to like get rid of Thad and Sato and Otto and these guys too. And like the longer on the more time you have left on Zach's contract, where he is only making 19 as opposed to 35, the more value you're going to get for him. So I think there is like, that probably puts a little bit more leverage in whoever's looking to trade him, in the hands of whoever's looking to trade him. I am fine with paying Zach. I really am. I think He'll be worth it. I think that will be like a tradable deal. So yeah, to me, it just like, it really comes down to value. I don't really see, like, with the exception of the like Jokic pipe dream scenario, a way for them to get into like the top five in the East, given what they have right now, unless like Kobe or Wendell or Pat like become near stars. So I guess I'd be like more inclined to try to trade him, but like definitely not in any super rush. Like I agree with Kevin that like the deal has to be there, and I think the deal has been there for a lot of stars, except for that a lot of these contenders have already used all their picks to get the guys that make them contenders, right? So it's just going to come down to value, but I think I'm probably a little bit more open to it than Kevin, but definitely not looking to rush it.
Yeah, you probably need at least a couple picks, I guess, depending on how high they are. Maybe like a decent young player in there. Like I am curious, like what I feel like Bulls fans would probably be pretty pissed if they traded Zach for like basically just picks and like no even like interesting player, like if like to even help like right now a little bit. Like I'm really curious what like the reception would be if it was basically just a total like tank restart move for trading Zach. I feel like people would be pretty pissed. But I mean, if it was like a whole shit ton, like yeah, I could get behind it. But yeah, I mean at this point, like. Like I mentioned, the Bulls have a lot of their own assets, and they have some theoretically interesting young players. Like Kobe being this bad so far has been disappointing and kind of hurts this. But like, yeah, I mean, why not try to just trade for somebody to play with Zach instead of trading him and then starting over again? Like Zach is, I think, good enough at this point where you're not going to build around him. Like that was the whole conversation with Jimmy, where it's like, well, can we build around him? Are we building with him? Like whatever. Like Jimmy was legitimately good enough to build around Zach. You're not really building around him, but you can absolutely build like a good team with him if the Bulls can cash in on some of these other assets, if they can get a good draft pick or two. So yeah, I'm kind of on the same boat with you guys. Like I'm cool paying Zach now. He's proven enough to me that he's good enough where I think you can kind of roll forward with him if you don't trade him. Again, if someone does come to the table with a huge deal, yeah, I mean, why not? Sure, go for that trade, but we'll see. We got what, a month and a half before the deadline. The Bulls have, I guess we don't really know when that second half of the schedule is coming out, but they got a somewhat soft schedule here. So like I said, let's wrap up here. We've been going for a while. Looking ahead for the Bulls, they have two games against the Magic this weekend, Friday, Saturday. The Magic are absolutely awful. They're ravaged by injuries. The Bulls probably should win both games, but you can never really put anything past them with their performance. So we will see. Like this is basically, I saw somebody tweet out, this could be like a little make or break stretch for this team in terms of like, if are they going to actually compete and like a legitimate competitor for one of these playing spots or like the 8th? I mean, the East is such trash right now. The 6th seed is like 10-11 is the Hawks. So like the Bulls are probably going to be there this whole time. But coming up, like I said, we got the Magic, we got the Wizards, who are, like I said, they are playing a little better, but it's still the Wizards. The Pelicans after that, the Pelicans are actually beating the Suns' ass right now by 21 points, which is kind of surprising you. So the Pelicans have some talent, but again, that's four games against teams under 500 where the Bulls should have a decent chance of winning. If they can get through that with some wins, we'll see kind of where they are at after that. But yeah, disappointing loss tonight for sure against the Knicks, 107-103. We will wrap it up right here. Guys, thank you so much for joining us here on Cash. Will and Kevin, as always. Will, thanks for joining me on the last pod that we did. Kevin, thanks for here joining us tonight as well. And Ricky left us already. He had to bounce, so Ricky, as always, is great. And for me, Jason at Cash Considerations, thank you all the rest of the listeners who joined us and added in the comments in the commentary in the discussion section. It was good stuff in here. We always appreciate your input. For me, you know where to find me on Twitter. I'm at Bulls_J. You know where Ricky's at on Twitter, at SBN_Ricky. So if you ever want to give us shout-outs on Twitter, if you want to give us feedback or have any ideas, I think coming up pretty soon here, we're probably going to do a Q&A on Twitter and do one of those for a cast because we haven't done one of those in a while. And it was always shout-out to Blue Wire Pod, Blue Wire hosting Cast Considerations. They are great. Thanks again, guys. I'm going to take off here. It was a lot of fun tonight. And Bulls Magic coming up Friday. We'll see how this weekend goes against the Magic. Take it easy.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.